This is an iHeart podcast.
What's with these Trump tariffs? I will explain what's happening. Jack Smith dropped the cases against Trump. Is that enough? Is Kamala Harris really going to run again? You got to hang on so you can watch that segment. All that and what I'm having for Thanksgiving on I'm Right. What's with these tariffs? I'm seeing a lot of this right now. And for those who are not up to date on the news, allow me to pretend to be a journalist really quickly and explain what Trump has been putting out there publicly. He's been publicly saying, in fact, he publicly said, Canada, Mexico, you need to stop the flow of illegal immigration and drugs into this country across your border. And if you don't, 25% tariff on day one. On all the goods that are coming across, I'm gonna slap a 25% tariff on you, okay? He did the same thing with China, told him, hey, this fentanyl, gotta stop. 10% tariff on Chinese goods, you better make it stop. Okay, let's pause on this, because there are a lot of people of different economic persuasions understandably arguing about this, and you know what? That's fine. It's fine to have good fiscal policy debate if you're a political nerd like you are and like I am. Argue with your friends. I love tariffs. I hate tariffs. But what's happening is not about tariffs. It's not about free markets or free trade or tariffs or whatnot. You ever go to a party in high school you weren't supposed to? So just stay with me. You ever go to a party in high school you weren't supposed to? Most people have. I'm not encouraging you kids watching to do this. There's nothing good that's going to happen there. But most people have done this at some point in their lives. You end up at a party, you're a sophomore, junior in high school, people are drinking there, and there's illegal things going on, underage drinking, things like that, and the music gets loud, and everyone's having a good time, and it feels dangerous, and woo-hoo-hoo, not that I've ever done this before. And then, if you grew up where I grew up, the cops are gonna show up. Eventually, you're going to see flashing lights everywhere, multiple cop cars. In they come through the front door, and, well, the party's over. And in that moment, you know what nobody ever, ever, ever says? Nobody says, woo! Thank goodness the cops are here. About time we got this thing closed down and wrapped up. No one ever says that. No one's a big fan of the cops in that moment. We just want to party and live it up. But you got to have the cops there, because the partying has to stop. What happens when Democrats take over the United States of America, because they hate America now, this new Democrat Party hates the country, what happens is, you see, they hate the country, and they just want to loot America dry, they want to loot the Treasury, and they begin the looting process. But they don't isolate it to just them. You see, when Democrats take over, they really tell everyone. They just put the signal out to the world, hey, come on in and take what you want. And then the whole world knows. When Democrats take over the country, you can pillage the United States Treasury if you want. If you have people, undesirables in your country you don't want there, because Democrats hate the country, they'll open up the border and you can just ship them there. But Venezuela, as I've said, they emptied out their prisons. They just walked into their prisons and all the murderers and rapists and gang members, hey guys, pack it up, you're going to America. This is what happens when Democrats take over. It happens internationally as well. If you're in Ukraine and you want to bloodsuck the American taxpayer for every single dime he has in order to fund Ukrainian government pensions, did you know you're funding that? Well, Democrats will allow that. Sure, come on in. Hey, take whatever you want from the Treasury. Hey, take it all. Just take everything. Again, they're busy trashing the place, and they extend that to the whole world. And so now Donald Trump steps in, takes over. He hasn't taken office yet, but he has to stop the party. It's time. Cops are coming in. Open up. Shut the music off. Give me that beer. The party's stopped. You see, what's her name? Angela Merkel? A German chancellor. She's a hag, commie witch anyway. But she said, quote, the more people, this was about dealing with Trump, the more people there were in the room, the greater was his urge to be the winner. You can't chat with him. Every meeting is a competition, you or me. All these dirty commie world leaders say things like that. Well, what are they actually saying? Hey, when Democrats are in office, there's no America first because they don't give a crap about the country. Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, they'll go in, sit down in these meetings and hand out all your money. Here, take some money for this and take some money for that. And here's another $50 billion for windmills. And no, America will just do it all, take whatever you want. And then Donald Trump gets in there and says, no, actually, no, you won't pillage us anymore. You're not going to do this. You're going to pay your fair share. You're going to stop this. I want the American president. You want the American president to walk into these meetings and compete on your behalf. But to these people, they're just mortified by that. They're mortified at the thought of that. So let's go back to the tariffs. Canada, Mexico, they allow these people into our country, oftentimes on purpose. Oh, I understand we do have illegal immigration that comes in from the oceans. It does happen. And I understand a lot of the immigration, they have, quote, made it legal by bringing in all these people under the guise of being refugees. I get all that. But still, the vast majority of the people illegally coming into this country, the human slaves, the drugs, the everything, they come right through Mexico with the knowledge of the Mexicans, and they come right through Canada with the knowledge of the Canadians. And the truth is, if you're in Canada, if you're Mexico, and the American president is going to allow you, well, why would you stop them? Mexico doesn't want to deal with it. They don't want to deal with these people. They don't want to house these people. They don't want to feed these people. They don't want to use resources to even stop these people. So what do? You step aside. You step aside like a matador and say, there you go. America's that way. Have a good one, Lupe. And they do the same daggone thing up in Canada. As long as the American president is weak and hates the country, then he's going to let you just whisk everybody right across your border and right into the United States of America. So now, with that kind of understanding, let's talk about this threat, because that's what this is. It's a threat. A negotiating tactic, maybe you want to put it that way instead of a threat, but that's what it is. Donald Trump is saying the party's over. The tariff threat or negotiation tactic, it's not about economy, economics, free markets. That has nothing to do with it at all. It is about our neighbors being more neighborly now that we have an American president who actually cares about the United States of America. And just like those kids at that high school party you used to be at, or at least you heard about, the rest of the world that was enjoying looting our country is not going to like it. It's not going to be popular. However, it works. Did you know, within 12 hours of Trump publicly announcing these tariffs, the Mexican president came out and said, the migrant caravans, yeah, we're going to put a stop to those. And Justin Trudeau already got Donald Trump on the phone. That's how you make things move. The cops showed up. The music was turned off. The drinking will be stopped because now the adults are finally back in charge. And no, you are not allowed to pillage the United States of America without end. And look, this is how we're going to have to handle things internally as well, because you have these states, blue state after blue state, that tubby loser Pritzker in Illinois, all kinds of these governors and mayors. We're not going to cooperate. We're not going to allow you to deport our illegals. And again, you got to whip these dirty commies to get what you need out of them. Tom Homan came out and said, go ahead and try it. See what happens.
But these states, much like the Confederacy, they want to go on their own. They want to do their own thing. To me, you've got a powerful weapon, among others, which is okay, no federal funds. Boom. Last thoughts.
And that's going to happen. I guarantee you, President Trump will do that.
That's how it has to be done. You have people coming out and saying things about that. Like, hey, I'm not comfortable with that. Hey, this looks like retribution. Hey, this look. None of this is ideal. Ideally, as a country, you would never have one political party trying to destroy the country. Having different political parties with different views on taxes and spending and immigration and other things, that's the norm. But having a political party that actively tries to burn the country to the ground is not something you should have to deal with, but that's the hand we've been dealt. That's what we have to deal with here. We have to try to pick up the pieces after 4 years of Democrat destruction, both foreign-wise and domestic-wise. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Now, let's talk a little bit about patriotism, shall we? It's Christmas season. What do people want for Christmas? Well, they always want new phones. I want a new phone. Can I get a new phone? Okay. How about you get them a new phone or yourself a new phone and new phone service? You see, Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile, the big wireless companies, are horrible. DEI, putrid crap. You want to fund that? You can switch to PureTalk. Keep your phone or get a brand new phone. They have all the brand new stuff. You'll pay way less. I pay half of what I was paying at T-Mobile now. Half of what I was paying. And you get to support a company that shares and promotes your values. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. Merry Christmas. We'll be back. Okay, so this Jack Smith news, it's being treated as good news, and I guess in a way it is good news. Jack Smith came out yesterday, said all these charges I've been running at Donald Trump with, we're dropping the whole thing. But where do we go for our $90 million back? And where does Donald Trump go? Where do the American people go for justice from here? Because this can't happen again. Joining me now, Mark Pauletta, as he has done before, former general counsel for the Office of Management and Budget under Trump. Okay, Mark, I'm glad the cases are dropped, woohoo, but that doesn't make us whole again. How do we get whole again?
Yeah, Jesse, thanks for having me on. Look, this lawfare was despicable. These cases should have never been brought. It was an abuse. Going all the way back to Crossfire Hurricane, right? Back in 2016, going after President Trump. They've been after him forever. He persevered and was reelected. I think on January 20th, the president and his team should, you know, begin what I call accountability, which is to look into this lawfare, to look into those who abused their offices, to look into those who sought to deprive people of their rights. And that's what you need to do. So that begins the accountability. You know, I've been around long enough to remember when the Democrats enacted the independent counsel statute, kind of the beginnings of lawfare back in 1978. That's the law that was absurd in that it let federal judges pick prosecutors to go after the executive branch, and they did. And they terrorized President Reagan and his team. And it wasn't, and everyone loved it until it went after Bill Clinton with Ken Starr. And they realized, wow, this is not a good idea to have out of control prosecutors. And so they let that law lapse. This is sort of the independent counsel 2.0. They're called special counsels now. They're actually controlled by the president and his team and the attorney general. But there needs to be accountability of not just federal prosecutors, right? But the state prosecutors, the local prosecutors who went after President Trump and his allies and his family, and investigate and if appropriate, prosecute them under 18 USC 241, which is a conspiracy to deprive rights. And that's the only way, right? This isn't retribution, as I call it. It's called accountability, holding people accountable for their acts.
No, justice is what we need. We don't need retribution or revenge, but we do need justice. Otherwise, we don't have a country anymore. Okay, so I'm going to use a big lawyer word. You're going to be very proud of me, even though I'm stupid and uneducated. You mentioned what the crime would be, but what do we need to find to make sure that is prosecutorial? Did I say that word right, Mark?
Yeah, prosecutorial. Yes, yes, sir. Yeah.
Yes. So what do we need to find to make sure that it was prosecutorial?
Looking at their conduct, their communications, what they were seeking to do to actually go after President Trump, because all of these things really happened, Jesse, right? Because he was a candidate. If President Trump didn't run for office, they wouldn't have gone after him. And we saw that, right? Once he'd announced, they really revved it up. And you saw Jack Smith going after him, filing superseding indictments weeks before the election. Those are all things that sought to deprive President Trump of his right to run for office, right? Of his rights as an American citizen. So looking for, through depositions, through subpoenas, looking at their communications to see the communications between Fannie Willis, right, and down in Georgia and the Biden team, Tish James, AG Tish James, Alvin Bragg. We all know they were working together, coordinating. And so that's the kind of stuff you want to sort of look into, dig into, to determine whether there were, it certainly looks like there was a conspiracy to deprive President Trump of his rights, and then make the case and, if appropriate, prosecute them.
Amen. Okay, let's shift gears here to the FBI. That's the big fat cabinet appointment that we're all still waiting for now. There are all kinds of talks about Kash Patel. I like Kash Patel a lot. There are talks about Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey. This would be one that I would be, I mean, I'd be doing backflips up and down the block if it was Andrew Bailey. But whoever it happens to be, a reformer, let's assume we get a reformer like that. How much power does the director actually have, Mark, to clean out the snakes in that building?
Yeah, the most important thing, Jesse, right, is that the FBI director and the attorney general, they work for the president of the United States. And that's something that the left, starting kind of in the 70s, this whole idea that the DOJ and the FBI are independent and they get to look into anything they want. They don't. They work on what the president directs them to work on. President directs them not to work on something, they don't work on something. You know, looking into these employees, you know, the leadership, I think, of the FBI has gone, you know, whatever you want to call it, woke, weaponized, anti-Trump, you know, absolutely obsessed with taking down President Trump. You know, the rank and file agents are, you know, a lot of them are great Americans, right? Trying to do their job. They're just told by their leadership, go after, you know, parents going to school boards, you know, Catholics going to mass, people, you know, pushing back on the vaccine, all those sorts of things, going after, you know, or suppressing, you know, the Hunter Biden story with the laptop. So, you know, there are, you know, civil service laws and rules, and you need to, you know, deal with them, reform them, but make every, you know, every means possible to get rid of the bad apples. Because when you look at the, you know, I spent 4 years, 3 years at OMB. When you look at the polling of career employees, what they hate the most are bad apples, people who are actually abusing the system, who don't work, who resist. And what's very, very clear, right, coming in 2016, right, was a tremendous victory by President Trump. It was a disruptor. This time around, right, he campaigned on a very clear, you know, agenda of deporting illegal aliens, right, securing the border, shutting down the weaponization, getting rid of DEI, investigating anti-Semitism. All those things, FBI agents and the Department of Justice career employees are required to go all in to support those things, or they should be suspended or terminated when they try and block or, you know, slow roll these investigations. I posted on X several examples of career employees in the last administration stonewalling the investigation into Yale University for discrimination, and into Andrew Cuomo and all the you know, elderly who were dying in the nursing homes under COVID, right? The career people were fighting those things. Those people should be fired, right? And we should fight that if they try and sue after they're terminated.
No doubt about it. Okay, let's talk about the OMB, the Office of Management and Budget. It's not one of the big names, not the sexiest office in the world, but it is so critically important what happens at the OMB. And now we have Russ Vought, who was just put by Trump in there. And I love Russ. I think that was a great pick. But what is this office, Mark? What do you people do over there?
It is the... My personal opinion, it's the greatest office in government. Russ Vought is a dear friend. I worked with him for 3 years. Fantastic pick by President Trump. The most effective person in the first administration, in my opinion, supporting President Trump. Truly committed to enacting, helping enact his agenda. What it does is it's a sort of tip of the spear, as we viewed ourselves, within the executive office of the president. They set it up so that there is this office that's big enough to help kind of oversee the rest of the other agencies to help them, make them support the president's agenda. Sometimes you have agencies, right? The State Department, other places that kind of go off track. So they help put together the budget for the president, right? So all the agencies submit their requests and what they want to spend things on and all that kind of stuff. It goes into OMB. Russ is the one in working with those agencies and working with the president and the White House to finalize that budget and make it, you know, the budget that the president presents up to Congress. Then it's actually working with those agencies to make sure that they are implementing it as the year goes along. And there's a lot of power, there's a lot of levers to help make sure that the president's agenda is being implemented at the agency level. And so that's what OMB does by and large. When President Trump was looking, when Congress refused to give him the money he asked for to build the wall along the southern border, he came to us. I was a general counsel at the time, looking, said, find money for me in the federal budget. That's what we did. We went, because we have lots of experts. We found, you know, billions of dollars at the Department of Defense that we were able to tap when the president declared an emergency to build the wall. When the president had concerns about the Ukraine money and the corruption that was over there, and he wanted to pause that money, I was the one who wrote the legal opinion to pause that money so the president could have time to review you know, his options of how to spend that money. So it's those sorts of things that OMB does. It's within the executive office of the president. I wouldn't say it's a secret, but it's below the radar office that is a great machine, an engine to help the president. And Russ Vo is the best person he could have possibly picked for that position.
Yeah, I'm a fan. Mark, I'm going to ask you something. I want you to be honest. You're on camera here. Do you still have any of the business cards that say general counsel on there? You do, don't you? Don't you?
I do. I bought them. I don't mind. You buy your own cards when you're a government employee. So yes, I still have lots of them, and we'll see what the next administration holds.
Yeah, I'd hand those cards out to everybody just to brag. Mark, appreciate it. Thank you so much. All right. I'm going to ask something. I can't even believe I have to ask this, but is Kamala Harris going to run again? Because there are a lot of rumors out there that Dome is going to run again. We have a panel to discuss that. Next, before we discuss that, let's discuss you and how you sleep at night. More importantly, how you wake in the morning. That's what sleeping's all about. It's how you feel when you wake up, right? There are 1,000 things you can take to help you sleep. Prescription, over-the-counter things, I know there are. I have tried one thing in my entire life that makes me still feel good when I wake up. Oh, a bunch of things can put me to sleep, but I always wake up exhausted. Not Dream Powder from Beam. It's hot chocolate, only it's hot chocolate that'll put you to sleep. It's got all natural things in it like melatonin. You drink Dream Powder from Beam, and you just kind of go out. And when you wake up, you feel like I feel every single day. Do you want that? Up to 40% off. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back. All right, I can't believe what I'm about to say, but I can believe what I'm about to say. I know that sounds stupid, but I'm stupid. So Kamala Harris, there are a lot of rumors, which means she's already thinking about it, that she's running again, that she's going to run again in 2028. That unlikable hag is going to give it another run. And I don't understand these people. These people get so in love with politics and the limelight, I'll never get it. Anyway, maybe she'll win. She might be the nominee with all the fruitcakes they have in that party. Joining me now, Alexis Wilkins, host of Between the Headlines on Rumble, and Brianna Lyman, elections correspondent at The Federalist. I love her election coverage. Okay, Alexis, let's start with you. If I was as historically unpopular as Dome, and I just lost $1 billion on a disastrous presidential run, I would maybe do something else?
Yes, I think any regular person or any sane person rather would consider maybe downsizing the concept of their campaign at least. I mean, if not get out of politics, you wasted $1 billion. Maybe, you know, consider the California governor position or literally anything else besides the Oval Office. The American people thought that Kamala Harris was widely unlikable, even people in her own party. And I think it's just a testament to how empty the bench is for them. You know, they've spent an entire couple of decades just propping people up. And now they're really, you know, reaping what they sowed, because they don't have anyone to put up there that they don't have to install.
Brianna, you were all over this election. I was following all your stuff on social. So maybe you can break this down for me. I know why I don't like Dome. You know, I'm pretty sure I understand, or at least I have an idea of why you two would not like her. But Democrats like anybody they're handed in general, do they not? I mean, you could hand those people a crap sandwich and they'll tell you how delicious it is. Why did they hate Kamala Harris so much?
Well, I think that they're willing to go to great lengths to defend members of their own party if need be. The Democratic Party, though, does not like Kamala Harris. When Joe Biden announced he was running, I believe it was Nancy Pelosi, Barack Obama, who behind the scenes were thinking she was not going to be the best candidate for Democrats to run. Unfortunately, Joe Biden kind of shivved them and immediately endorsed her, so it would have been hard to replace her. When we talk about the fact that she may run for president again, I think it's better for her to run for governor, and I say it because of this. The one thing that people who run for presidency multiple times, Donald Trump 2016, 2020, 2024, the one thing he has that Kamala did not have from 2020 to 2024 is momentum. He was able to expand his base. His movement only grew stronger. Kamala Harris doesn't have that. And if you don't have that, you cannot successfully run a campaign. So if she becomes governor, she will be able to say she was successful in California because they're so far left. And that will also give her time to distance herself from her administration and give her a real shot in, 2032?
Okay, so if it's not going to be Dome in 2028, who's on the bench? I would say Josh Shapiro, Brianna, but he has a Jewish problem with this new Democrat party that seems to hate Jews. Who's it going to be?
Yeah, you know, I'm happy you said Josh Shapiro, not Gavin Newsom, because I think the conventional wisdom is that it would be Gavin. But Gavin is highly unpopular within his own state. They've seen a high amount of exodus. Josh Shapiro tries to bill himself as a moderate, and I think that right now the media has gone along with it. But I do think if he was to throw his hat in the ring, conservative media would take the necessary steps to show that he is not a moderate. This man is a far leftist. He sat by while Bob Casey just tried to steal the Senate race. He did nothing about that. That's not a moderate candidate. That's a far left activist.
The LGBTQ plus, I don't know, I'm too old. I lost track of all the stupid letters and things like that they're using now. It's something that has become a millstone around the neck of the communists in this country, and they don't seem to be able to let it go. Senator Duckworth was on TV. This is what she said.
We have issues here in this country, and yet she's worried about one member of Congress using the bathroom. Number one, I think her position is disgusting and wrong, but I also think that we have a lot more to worry about than where somebody goes to pee.
Alexis, this issue, this general issue, it's not popular. It didn't resonate with the voters. One of the most popular ads Trump ran was that ad about Dome wanting to buy tranny surgeries for all the prisoners. This is not a good issue for them, yet they don't appear to be able to let it go.
No, and this is the thing. This is exactly why they lost. They continue down these issues that are too woke for even the woke. You know, I have friends who voted, for Joe Biden in 2020 and have been historically pretty leftist. And they even arrived at the 2024 conclusion of we went too far left. And these issues and these ideologies that are just being shoved down people's throats, you know, even the left is tired of it. And they're picking these very, very niche issues. You know, at the end of the day, the trans thing. It's a good talking point and a good headline if you want to make a big deal out of it and a big fit out of it. But at the end of the day, you know, it's not going to win elections. It doesn't garner voters, especially not in the same way that the economy and illegal immigration and national security can. And they just keep going down this same path, even post-election. And so it makes me wonder, you know, about their empty bench, about their empty ideology. You know, I saw some tweets that were saying, you know, hey, I'm going to start gathering people together, Scott Pressler style, on the left, that is. Because that seemed to work. You know, I think that the left, who has been traditionally, you know, thought of as more grassroots, has completely lost their grassroots ideals and their grassroots, you know, even concepts to know what their voting base cares about, especially when we're all paying left or right for the same groceries and the same economy that is totally train wrecked. So I think that they're just continuing down this path, and until they correct it, they're not going to go anywhere with it.
I'm actually glad you brought up their messaging. Alec Baldwin, there's a little video floating around online. Alec Baldwin, well, here he is talking about how uninformed we are.
There's a hole, there's a vacuum. There is a gap, if you will, in information for Americans. Americans are very uninformed about reality, what's really going on with climate change, Ukraine, Israel, you name it, all the biggest topics in the world. Americans have an appetite for a little bit of information. That vacuum is filled by the film industry.
Brianna, I've found their messaging on everything, the economy, everything, to be so snobbish, cold. I'm not even sure what word I want to put on that because I went to community college. But they kept telling people there's no inflation, the economy's doing good, the border's fine, it's all your imagination, you're just a moron, Thanksgiving doesn't cost more. Look, even if they actually believed that, they used to be smart enough to not say it.
Yeah, and here was just what Alec Baldwin said at the end. He said that that vacuum is being filled or has to be filled by Hollywood. Americans resoundingly rejected on November 5th the idea that the Hollywood apparatus, the left-wing pundits, would set the narrative for the American public and that they had the ability to gaslight the American public about the state of the economy, for example. And I think it was CNN that came out and recently said, you know, X is more emblematic of the state of this country. And on X, we see people saying the economy actually isn't that great. Things aren't so great. Bill Clinton recently said that one of the problems the Democrats had this election cycle is they spoke down to voters and said, the economy's good and you better believe it. And so what the left is talking about, what Alec Baldwin basically says, is that they don't like that they've now lost control and they've lost the ability to set the narrative. I think that's also why you see a push to target Elon Musk and X, because they need to regain these different channels to regain their control on the American public.
Alexis, real quick, are we going to get any kind of a bounce back in the media world? I should say the Hollywood world, because that's your world, the whole actors and actresses and singers and fancy people stuff. They've all been a bunch of commie dirtballs for so long, but it seems like they're being more willing now to be open and vocal about that. Sylvester Stallone's giving speeches at Mar-a-Lago. Is your industry turning it around at all?
You know, I do feel optimistic that they're starting to understand that that doesn't reach people or voters or even just people who are consuming the media. But we're still seeing the same pushes. You know, these people, it's not that they've been given orders and they're just executing orders. They really do think that they're better than the American people, which is why, you know, even though I'm in music, it's not really the world I fit in with. It's an elitist group of people who push their ideals, and they're doing it from their, you know, 30,000 foot view. As we just saw Alec Baldwin say, he's basically calling the average American voter and media consumer stupid. I mean, that's effectively what he's saying. And at the end of the day, you know, on November 5th, we learned that the American people don't like being spoken down to. They don't like the elitists. They don't like being called stupid. We don't like when Mark Cuban says that women are weak and dumb. You know, people come back from that with what they actually believe. And I think that that's what's happening. And if we see any kind of, you know, alternate people wanting to speak up, I think that that will be met with positivity, because the people who came out against President Trump and called the American people stupid, it's not going to go well for them trying to gain that audience back. And frankly, even just watching this clip of Alec Baldwin, it doesn't seem like that's what they're willing to do, because honestly, I think that they have their hands too dirty within the entertainment industry. But that's just my opinion. You know, they're kind of at the neck here.
Mark Cuban's a confusing person for me. He's a billionaire, and that hair, the dye job is so bad. Just shave it, Mark. Look at me. I just let it go. You got to let it go. Everyone knows that's a dye job, Mark. Ladies, thank you. Come back soon. I appreciate it. Why would you do that when you're a billionaire? No one will tell him about his hair? Look at me, Mark. I'm still pulling it off, right? Just buzz it down, buddy. Anyway, let's save a baby really quick. Give something to preborn. This is the Christmas season. And there are a lot of very confused young ladies out there, scared, obviously. And right now, you know what they're doing? I'll tell you what they're doing right now. They're on their phone looking for how to get an abortion. Where can I go? What do I do? How do I kill it? That's a reality. As we speak, as you're watching me right now, that's happening in this country, all over this country. Preborn, they find that young lady, and they just offer her help, a free ultrasound, free. And if she needs help after that, because when she gets the ultrasound, she'll choose life. If she needs diapers, if she needs formula, if she needs counseling, if preborn is there. Hands and feet, saving lives, help them. And everything you give to preborn is tax deductible. The ultrasound costs $28. Give them a grand if you can. Give them $5, whatever you have. It goes for the babies, goes to the babies. Preborn.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
So now Lauren's just gonna kind of douse this. She's gonna bathe this bird. Bathe the bird.
It's getting a nice bath.
Yeah, yeah, there we go, right? So just, that's perfect.
Smell this.
So we're gonna pop this into a 375 degree oven.
That bad boy.
Oh yeah. Okay, now look at this heat, right? So what I'm actually going to do is that I am now going to take this bird, okay? I'm gonna take it off the rack and I'm gonna put it onto our cutting board and let it cool. So look at this, look at this. That nice crispy skin on there.
I hate gruel. I'm always starving every time I look at any, every time I watch American Gravy, every time he posts something on X, even if I've just eaten, I just end up sitting there, I almost drooled just now. Joining me now, host of American Gravy, which you can watch right here on the First TV, the great chef, Andrew Gruhl. Okay, chef, tell us about the show.
We're just going through the classics. I mean, it's really easy, approachable, simple, crave-worthy food, nothing too over-intellectual about it. You know, I'm not trying to redefine anything, but get everybody in the kitchen, understand it a little bit more. That's our goal.
Okay, chef, first of all, turkey, as you know, I'm not going to go into it. Everyone knows it's not my thing. I'm very loudly against it. But there are a bunch of people with no standards watching this show who are going to have turkey. And you have, from what I understand from my producer, the ultimate way to prepare it. He made it the way you said last year and said it was the best thing he's ever eaten in his life. So I will reluctantly hand you the floor. How should all these savages prepare their turkey?
All right, so you got to do the dry brine. And that's actually when you salt the bird 24 hours ahead of time, put it in the refrigerator, uncovered, right? Because what you're doing is you're drying the exterior of the bird out. That's creating a pellicle, which means you can get crispier skin on the bird, which is really what makes the bird, or at least to some degree. So do the dry brine for 24 hours. Then when you get the bird out, right, you want to cut that, like I'm doing right there. You want to cut the backbone out of the bird, flip it over and press it down so it's flattened. It's called spatchcocking. I repeat, it's called spatchcocking, and that is where the bird is flattened. It cooks evenly, your legs are tender, meltingly tender, if you will, and your breasts cook at a better rate so that they're not dried out by the time the legs are cooked, and your bird is gonna be crispier. Plus, it takes you like half the time it would if you did that big round bird. So once again, sea salt or any salt, dry brine, split the bird, press it down, and then roast it at a high temp. That's it.
Spatchcocking. I bet you that's how Kamala Harris prepares her. Tell us about costs in the food industry, because everyone complains now, understandably so. Restaurant menus have been pared down. I don't know, they took my favorite item off. Food's gotten more expensive. Cost you $100 to take family of four to Red Lobster anymore. And people are just frantic about it. Why have the costs gone up so high in the food industry?
It's multi-causal. I mean, it's pretty complex, but first and foremost, inflation, right? And fuel costs. So when fuel costs go up, all the food prices are going to go up, because if I buy a product, right, it takes six different trucks for it to be delivered to me. So you've got that element, and then you've also got all these supply chain disruptions overseas, Ukraine. People ask, well, why does what's happening in Ukraine affect my food costs here? Well, we rely so much on the global market for our food, which is why I think the tariffs are so important, because we bring a lot of it back home. Then when you've got these conflicts overseas, it's not going to affect our food prices here. So the big three, food prices, are it's fuel cost, it is inflation generally, and then it's any international event that's affecting these.
Chef, the American consumer, I realize DoorDash and Uber Eats and things like that has really, really changed the restaurant industry, but restaurants haven't gone away. How does it change things for restaurants?
Well, DoorDash and Uber Eats, they take 30% of all of the sales. So you're only increasing revenue but not profit when you use DoorDash or Uber Eats. And it's been this necessary evil. And they consolidate at the top. Now, they don't make any money. All they're doing is that they're taking investor money in order to increase their size of business and almost act in a mafioso style to make the restaurants use them. So the restaurants feel as if it's necessary. The next guy does it, and the next guy does it, then they all got to do it. The pandemic consolidated that process by which they really kind of took hold of restaurants. Now, I'm a principled guy. I'll throw the baby in the bathwater, all of it away, however the cliche goes. I don't use any of those third-party delivery outlets because screw them. And if I go under because of it, well, then I'll just end up washing dishes for the rest of my life. But they're pretty evil, I'm not going to lie.
Tell me about no taxes on tips.
No tax on tips. It's the best thing that can happen for the United States. And let me tell you why. Number one, you're removing taxes for a huge sector of an industry. That in and of itself on principle is great because it's dominoes. You do that for one industry, then as goes in America, well, why can't I get that done for my industry? Well, let's go ahead and do it for your industry. So let's just remove taxes altogether. But the thing about the no tax on tips from a payroll perspective is that 15 to 20% of my total payroll amount is the tips on the waiters and waitresses tax, the taxes on their tips. Excuse me, got my mix all talked up here. So when you're actually cutting those taxes for the server, you're also cutting it for the business. That saves me upwards of six figures a year. So you're putting more money in the server's pocket, which is more money they can spend in the economy. And then you're making my payroll more consistent. Because the thing is, I don't know how much they're going to make in tips every week. So let's say Joe Schmo makes $5,000 extra in tips and I got to pay 25% payroll taxes on that. Well, my payroll this week just jacked up $1,500, right? So it screws the business, it screws the worker, and it's the right thing to do to remove them altogether.
I like it. Chef, thank you so much. Everybody go watch American Gravy right here on the first. I give you what you should be eating for Thanksgiving. Next. All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And what I'm about to say, we've talked about this before, I understand it gets people's blood up, it gets people angry. But not all traditions are great. Some are great, you know. Here in America, at a baseball game, we sing the national anthem. It's a great tradition, right? And God We Trust, printed on our money. These are wonderful traditions here, but not all traditions are great. Remember that old, I think it was in Japan, pretty positive it was, back in the day, they used to do foot binding on the women. They wanted the women to have short, small feet, and so they'd tie them up and basically abuse these women. Like, that's not a good tradition. So some traditions, like foot binding, should be left behind. I want you to think about having turkey for Thanksgiving as foot binding. Why are you still binding your feet? You need to let that go. But I don't just want to criticize. I don't want to be that person who says, hey, don't do this. You don't want to be that guy. Offer solutions. If you're going to criticize, offer solutions. So I thought it would be beneficial to maybe give you a little top five list. Thanksgiving foods. You want to break tradition this year? You want to blow people away? Let's do it. Number five, mac and cheese. Now, I know what you're thinking. Jesse, you're talking about Kraft mac and cheese. No, actually, no. I am white trash, but I'm not talking about Kraft mac because it's Thanksgiving. It's a special occasion. So you take that wonderful box of Kraft mac and you set it aside and you reach for the box of Velveeta shells and cheese. It's Thanksgiving. Spend a little extra money. Do it upright. Creamy deliciousness. Even better the next day. If you're doing really well financially, and I realize many people are not, go two boxes. Anyway, not Kraft Mac, I'm sorry. Velveeta shells and cheese. The Kraft Mac has to wait for another day. Number four, garlic bread. I don't even really have to throw this on the list because, as you know, if you've watched I'm Right for any length of time, you know that garlic bread, it's the universal side. It's the greatest side by a mile. It's superior to all other sides of any meal. Garlic bread is superior to bacon. It is. You know what the best side you can have is with everything, garlic bread. You don't have to hassle over it, her haggle over it. You don't have to argue with yourself. I'm not sure, should we get? Nobody has ever seen a big pile of garlic bread and thought, oh, dang, is there anything else? No, everyone dives in because everyone loves garlic bread. Number three, you want to blow people away this Thanksgiving? Chicken wings. Ah, oh, Jesse, that's crazy. It's the highest form of chicken there is. Chicken wings. Toss them in a good buffalo sauce. If you want to go crazy, maybe do a lemon pepper, something like that. But I would recommend buffalo because, listen, maybe you're thinking I'm crazy so far. Think about your plate already. You have Velveeta shells and cheese. You have garlic bread. And now you have your buffalo wings. But what's going to happen? The buffalo wing sauce, it's going to start to spread all over the plate. And, oh, what's that? Got some buffalo wing sauce in my Velveeta shells and cheese. Like, that won't be delicious. Oh, it's starting to spread around a little bit. I better take some garlic bread and sop up some of that wing sauce. Oh, did I get some cheese on that garlic bread as well? Now, are you seeing the magic I'm laying out for you right here? Number two, French fries. Everyone talks about, we gotta have the mashed potatoes. This is not your grandma's house. Mashed potatoes suck, okay? French fries are the superior form of potato. Everyone knows it. Maybe a tater tot I will allow, but we'll go French fries. And finally, what's the main course? Because you're not gonna have buffalo wings and Velveeta for your main course. What's number one? Well, you're gonna have to go watch that on my YouTube channel. Not only do I roll out number one, I tell you how to make number one. What's my main course this year and every year? Go to youtube.com/@JesseKellyDC and figure out how to eat like a king. Stop foot binding on Thanksgiving. I'll see you next week.
This is an iHeart podcast.